Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. We begin our program with some daily selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living, and the theme again for this month is Rolling in the Deep. Going through difficult times. Those who don't know how to weep with their whole hearts can't laugh either. Golda Meir. Learn to see through sickness into health, to see through poverty into success and abundance, to believe in the all-sustaining good, learn to trust in God and be at peace. Ernest Holmes, The Thing Called Life, page 28. We will all face tough and challenging times. Real peace comes from within as we deal with each of them. Research shows that most people are more resilient than we think. Most people have an astonishing capacity for emotional healing. They go through a dark period but find their way through it. When life hurts, let it hurt for a while, but trust you will get through it. Rabbi Harold Kushner tells of a 16-year-old girl who had juvenile diabetes. She was quite depressed. He told her, "Life is unfair. You don't deserve this, but don't let this one thing define you." 30 years later, she was a wife, mother, real estate agent, and community leader. Holmes wrote, "If you experience some condition that makes you unhappy, you must know there is nothing in you that attracts this condition, nothing in you that holds it in place, nothing in you that believes it must be this way." Several years ago, Stephen Colbert sat down with Anderson Cooper to discuss grief. They discussed topics like whether we can learn to love the things we most wish had never happened, and whether we can really become grateful for grief. Colbert believes we can. He told Cooper, "What do you get in loss? You get an awareness of other people's loss, which allows you to connect with that other person, which allows you to love more deeply and to understand what it's like to be a human being, if it's true that all humans suffer." Affirmation. I know when difficult times appear in my life, I'm not alone. Spirit is always with me. I know my faith will see me through this. Peace as a way of life. After every storm, there is a rainbow, no matter how long it takes to show up. Attributed to Grace V. Ohio. The song of hate must be laid down if we are to sing a hymn of praise. Ernest Holmes, Words That Healed Today, page 113. It is amazing to read about people who have lost everything and still attain a deep state of acceptance. We don't need to wait until we are in pain to make this discovery. We can decide right now to live from the inside out. Years ago, I read a story about a young man who applied for a job as a farmhand. When the farmer asked his qualifications, he replied, "I can sleep when the wind blows." The farmer wasn't sure what that meant, but he hired him anyway. A few nights later, there was a big storm. When the farmer went to check, everything was fastened down, locked up, or placed where it belonged. Through all this, the young man slept. Then the farmer understood. Because the young man had done his work when the skies were clear, he was prepared when the storm broke. When we do our spiritual work, we too are prepared when life takes unpleasant turns. If we wait until difficult times come, it may be too late. Even when there is turmoil in our outer world, we must cling to the peace in our inner world. The peace of spirit will get us through any storm, through any problems or obstacles that pop up in our lives. When we face situations that cause us stress, Holmes advises us to repeat passage from This Thing Called You. I am submerged in peace. I am surrounded by peace. I am immersed in peace. There is nothing but peace. Peace, deep, calm, undisturbed. Affirmation. As I look inward, my life unfolds smoothly. I look past appearances and know that in spirit there is no stress, no tension, no distress. There is only peace and serenity. My heart overflows with joy. And from the Daily Word, published by Unity, World Peace. I imagine peace and harmony uniting the world. Reconciling the desire for global peace with the reality of conflict and injustice is deep spiritual work. At times I may feel powerless to create meaningful change, but I remind myself that since consciousness shaped those conditions, consciousness can transform them. I begin with my own mind. I consider the woman healed by touching the hem of Jesus' garment. The real work began in her consciousness. She had to believe in her own worthiness, then summon the courage to act on that belief. So it is with me. Trusting in the goodness of God, Spirit, the universe, my consciousness rises on the faith that love and peace will prevail across the globe. I do what is mine to do. Trusting even small acts of compassion help create a more peaceful, harmonious world. Smile. My smile blesses me and the world around me. Most people can't help but respond warmly when in the presence of a person with a warm, welcoming smile. Sharing a smile doesn't take any special effort. It costs nothing and takes no time at all. Its benefits are many. I feel light and happy when I smile. Those who see me may feel inspired to start smiling themselves. A smile is a bridge, a way to connect to others. Even if a person is a stranger to me, even if we don't speak the same language, we can still share a smile. I find God, Spirit, the universe, anew in these heartfelt moments of connection. I can better apprehend my kinship with the human family, my fellow divine beings, with something so simple as a smile. And from Mark Nepos, The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, The Magic of Peace. As the lungs remember to breathe, even when we sleep, the spirit keeps us alive through the dream of our will. It is said that Merlin, when training young Arthur in the woods of Camelot, told him that the only difference between magicians and the rest of us is that magicians accept that our will is but a dream. Certainly, we decide what clothes to buy and what car to drive and even how to spend our days, but these are like the stones a hungry fish mouths along the bottom as a river sweeps its small life along. Still, we devote ourselves to these small things, for that is what we do, and it is true, God is inside every particular. Yet often we survive and even thrive, not because of our endless schemes, but in spite of them. But what I need to tell you is that I met Merlin in a dream, and I asked him about being alive. He wanted to know if I knew Arthur, and after a time he whispered, "Go beneath the many languages of desire, for our peace depends on whether we fight or ride the stream." This is a bedtime meditation. As you settle into sleep, breathe steadily, and just as you entrust your need for air to your lungs throughout the night, entrust your need for peace for your spirit and lean into the depth that surrounds you. We return now to Science of Mind for Julia Mattis's monthly column, A World That Works for All. Surrender to the Depth of the Divine. CSL's Global Outreach Committee envisions a world where all people awaken to their spiritual magnificence. Our mission is to create and support structures that allow for the fulfillment of this vision, ensuring the Science of Mind philosophy reaches all who seek it across all cultures and borders. We are committed to learning from and with one another, encouraging cultural understanding and promoting global collaboration. Our purpose is to support every individual who wants to learn, share, and teach Science of Mind, weaving a global network of connection, communication, and resources. This month's global theme, Rolling in the Deep, invites us to explore the depths of our own being, not as an intellectual exercise, but as a path to deepening our relationship with the divine. Too often we engage in spiritual work believing we must fix something within ourselves, as if we were broken or incomplete. But true transformation does not come from trying to force change. It comes from surrender, letting go of our attachment to outcomes, and trusting in the infinite intelligence that guides us. Letting go is not about passivity. It is about opening. When we stop grasping at what we think should be, we create space for what is truly possible. As Ernest Holmes reminds us, we must learn to trust that the universe is for us and not against us. This trust allows us to move beyond fear, beyond resistance, and into the deeper currents of spirit. Our spiritual tools, treatment, meditation, visioning, and affirmations, are not just practices. They are the doorways to the depths. They help us move below surface-level thinking and into the vast waters of divine wisdom. When we use these tools with an open heart, we discover a space of profound connection and guidance. As a global spiritual community, we are called to embrace the deep as something to trust. Just as the ocean's depths shape the world in unseen ways, so too our surrender to spirit shapes us in ways beyond comprehension. Let us roll in the deep, not in fear, but in faith, knowing that in the depths we are always held by the infinite, guided by love, and moving toward greater wholeness. And from the same issue, we turn to an article by Sue Frederick, Cynicism, 20/20 vision, or glaucoma. When you view life with cynicism, you wear your ego lens. Its dark filter reveals shadows while obscuring light. This is a skewed macro view of the world that focuses on shadowy corners while entirely missing the golden light that infiltrates everything. You may believe your cynicism protects you, shields you from ignorance, and keeps you from being duped into believing what isn't true. However, cynicism is a low-frequency energy and does not serve you, protect you, or enlighten you. Cynicism at its core is fear. Fear is the opposite of love, and love is the essence of this divine universe and what we came here to swim in. Cynicism is the natural state of your left brain logical mind. It shows you only half of the picture, and it blocks the essence of what you need to know. The higher truth, that which is essential, comes from your divine, illogical, intuitive right brain. It's the job of your left brain to filter out everything that lies beyond logic, beyond your five senses, so that you can focus primarily on this physical world to survive, find food and shelter, and navigate through dense energy. Yet without your inner guidance, your access to the divine, you're completely lost, unable to see the essence of things or remember who you are. Without your divine perspective, which is free of logic, unbridled in the creative flow, and immersed in sacred knowledge, you quickly become a lost soul. Wear your divine lens. Wearing your divine lens, you understand that everything is evolving for your highest good and the good of all souls. From this perspective, your heart knows that each soul, no matter how it appears on the surface, is behaving exactly as well or terribly as that soul's consciousness allows. You realize clearly that you came to this physical world to help shift consciousness, to shine your love and wisdom on all the lost souls and help them evolve. Cynicism in relationships is a deal breaker, a love destroyer. It brings you into a low vibration frequency where love does not exist. Opening your heart and focusing on the divine essence of another person, seeing them for who they came to be, for their greatness, allows you to help others embrace their potential. Yes, you may learn some painful lessons here, just as you agreed to do before you arrived. These lessons are for your highest good and your soul's fulfillment. You may avoid those lessons by stepping over them, using love and wisdom to navigate. But when you live in cynicism, anger, and fear, you will find yourself painfully slogging through each and every hard lesson you lined up for yourself in this lifetime. The higher realms are cynicism-free zones. In those realms, your heart is wide open, your love is fierce and unstoppable, and your essence is trusting. You embrace wisdom above all else. Being cynical means living in fear. Name it what it truly is. Cynicism is fear. Nothing more, nothing less. When you live in the murky waters of fear, you suffer. You fall far from grace. You plummet into the hell realm rather than swimming in the sweet ethers of divine love. Cynicism does not protect you. To be protected, you need clearer access to your divine intuition. Your soul reveals truth to you 24/7. You may be used to shutting this voice out, this divine whisper, but your inner wisdom, which comes from the heart and speaks in the voice of love, is the key to your success and happiness on earth. This wisdom tells you where to take your next step, whom to love, and what career to embrace. Your cynical mind pushes you into doubt, where you live in a world of evildoers, tragic events, meaningless work, and futile effort. Nothing you do is ever good enough. Nothing anyone does for you is ever good enough. People are selfish and out to get you, according to the cynical mind. You must be on guard because evil is more powerful than you are, says the ego. This is all true when you're not hooked up to your soul's wisdom and divine intuition. Move from cynicism to consciousness. The world as a whole is more cynical today than ever. This is because the overall vibrational speed of the energy on our planet has increased. As the vibration increases, our growth accelerates. As with all change, resistance is mounted equal to the gathering momentum for expansion. We're at a tipping point for fear versus love and cynicism versus consciousness. Which side are you on? What is your prevalent viewpoint? Are you a cynic? Do you find all kinds of logical reasons to embrace this viewpoint and wear this lens? True, there are many corrupt people in positions of power on our planet. Those who have much to learn ascend quickly to power, partly because of their unconsciousness, their inability to see the essence of things, and remember their soul's mission. This gives them a kind of fearlessness and ruthlessness required to gain power in a low-consciousness political system. These unconscious and greedy people are frequently in the spotlight. We're fascinated by them for a reason. Watching their inevitable downfall enlightens us. Our souls are taking notes. Yet view it this way. As each soul is brought into media scrutiny, its inner growth is spurred. This is a byproduct of the enormous attention humans receive in the public eye. This energy accelerates their vibration until they come face to face with their greatest soul lessons, which then unfold before us. Any intense focus on a person's life serves as a soul catalyst, though you may not always see this growth unfolding from your television screen. The seeds of growth are within all of us, and the hot lights of media burst these seeds into life. There are infinitely more awakened and conscious beings living on this planet than non-awakened beings. You are one of these awakening ones, working behind the scenes to shift us into the light. Divine consciousness is ultimately more powerful than the unenlightened acts of unconscious souls. The spiritual teachers, healers, writers, and artists among us are the ones holding the light, even if these individuals appear less famous or less successful than the unawakened. All lessons are learned in the end. Light trumps the darkness every time. Choose your side. 5 steps to shift to your divine lens view. 1. Take a deep, slow breath. Hold it for 5 seconds and release the breath slowly through your mouth. Repeat. 2. Send a prayer request for instant wisdom. I pray to be hooked up to the wisdom of my highest self, the divine realms, and the guidance of all the divine beings. I pray to align now and separate from my ego self in order to see the world through my divine lens and choose my words and actions from that perspective. 3. Quiet the mind and open the heart through daily meditation with mantra. Use Om Namah Shivaya. Repeat this mantra and refocus your mind on this phrase whenever you notice your thoughts. 4. Learn to see yourself and others as a soul on a shared journey by using tools of compassion such as numerology, astrology, angel cards, and prayer. Say, "Help me to see the path my sister, brother walks, understand their pain, and love them best on their journey. Their limitations and mistakes have nothing to do with me." 5. Ask, "What is my next step? How do I move forward through my cynicism, fear, and doubt?" Write those questions over and over until you begin to write the answers channeled from your higher self. You'll know the words are coming from your higher self because you'll be writing quickly without thinking or editing what you write. This is how divine guidance comes to us. At a glance, cynicism support. 1. Take one deep, slow breath and follow it in and out. 2. Mantra or prayer repetition for several moments. 3. Request. Please help me see my soul's perspective on this issue. 4. I am grateful for, fill in the blank. 5. I open my heart and send love to, fill in the blank. 1 positive step I can take today, fill in the blank. From the same issue, we turn to questions and answers by Reverend Dr. Jesse Jennings. Hope, a mindset to manifestation. Question, what is the truth about hoping for the best? Is hope really just a subtle illusion and pointless, as the Science of Mind textbook indicates? Answer, I've heard hope described repeatedly as feeble and useless, with the intent being to prompt robust choice, as in, don't just stand there, do something. There are certain instances where I dissent strongly from our standard teaching, and this is one of them. There are times when no human agency can suffice, not even our own cleverness or survival instinct, and no friend can be found. There are times when it appears that God, or whatever non-human agency we may believe in, feels far off. We're hanging from a cliff by our fingernails, and the only thing that keeps us from just giving up is a sudden ray of hope. Feeble? No. Mighty. Countless beings on this planet with little food and no shelter, living with disease or war, use hope to keep themselves alive another day, another hour. What else can do that? Certainly, the longer-term goal is to put hope into restorative action, to not just expect relief, but actually get it. Hope is not a substitute for action, but a mindset that's making room to accommodate the new experience that will follow the action. Joyous expectancy, which Science of Mind teaches, is hardly the opposite of hope. It is hope being celebrated and keenly directed. Hope is also an excellent goal-setting mechanism. When we ask ourselves what we would put in place instead of this, it's to our hopes that we're appealing. A hoped-for reality arises, surrounded by feeling, more compelling than any other outcome we may have been pointed toward. Then is the time for robust choice. Now that we know what we desire, we can pursue and attain it, or at least pursue it until we alter our course slightly to attain something else. Ernest Holmes went on to call spiritual healing the hope of heaven. There is one power beckoning to us from beyond material circumstances. Filled with hope, we follow. Reverend Dr. Jesse Jennings is Senior Minister of the Creative Life Spiritual Center serving Houston, Texas. Watch him live at facebook.com/creativelife.org on Sundays at 11 a.m. CT. For immediate prayer support, please contact World Ministry of Prayer at csl.org. We turn now to the July-August issue of Spirituality and Health, a Unity publication, and a column by Jackie Fernandez, The Joy of Texts, Perception is Everything. On a recent trip to Peru, as I soaked in the wisdom of local shamans, I had a realization that they were describing quantum physics without using any quantum physics jargon. It is one of my favorite aspects of ancient wisdom and new science, that they very often prove each other true and create deeper understanding and connection. I find this to be so in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, as accounted in the Gospel of Matthew. In two short verses, we find Jesus explaining quantum physics and the mind-body connection in relatable terms for his audience of first-century farmers and day laborers. In chapter 6, verses 22 to 23, he says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. So, if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" Scientific journals have published studies showing that the mind-body connection is so strong that the body will respond to what you believe to be true, even if it isn't. A favorite example, especially as someone who often struggles with sleep, involves a study that manipulated participants' beliefs about how long they had slept. Using specially altered clocks, one group slept for 8 hours but believed they had slept only 5, while another group slept 5 hours but believed they had slept 8. The group who believed they had slept longer demonstrated quicker reaction times and appeared more alert and relaxed than the group who had actually slept the full 8 hours. Jesus' words, "The eye is the lamp of the body," take on new meaning in this context. The eye, or mind's eye, our window of perception, illuminates the whole body. In other words, the body responds to what we perceive, not necessarily what is factual. Another fascinating set of studies demonstrated how the brain sets a sliding scale for fatigue. My non-professional explanation. In one experiment involving jumping jacks, one group was told to perform 100 reps, the other 200. Both groups began to feel fatigue about two-thirds of the way through. 65 to 70 jumping jacks for the first group, 130 to 140 for the second. That's double. This effect held true in other tasks as well. These findings show that the brain can alter the body's experience, creating a healing feedback loop, or a toxic one, through the mind-body connection. If your mind's eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness, says Jesus of Nazareth. Think of darkness not as evil, but as the lower frequencies of negative emotions. The molecules of negative emotions outweigh those of positive emotions by nearly 3 times. The darkness Jesus references can be felt by the heaviness of negative emotions in the body, and how great a burden that can be. Ancient wisdom and modern science are in agreement. From the Buddhist wisdom text, "All that we are is the result of what we have thought. The mind is everything. What we think, we become." From the Hindu wisdom texts, "As is your thought, so is your mind. As is your mind, so are your actions. As are your actions, so is your destiny. Choosing light is an active spiritual practice. We can leverage the tools of affirmations, gratitude, and mindfulness to let in more light. Be encouraged on your journey, you light maker, with this affirmation. I choose to see with clarity. I let in the light of truth, love, and peace. And from the same issue, Sylvia Hayes' monthly column, Sacred Earth Connections. Time for a new story. Humans are a storytelling species, and stories have power. We use story to describe the events of our lives and frame memories. We craft personal identities through the stories we tell ourselves and about ourselves. Stories weave history and shape culture. Stories compose narratives that affect worldviews. Currently, much of Western culture is caught in a political climate of battling narratives created and promoted by media and political interests spinning tales that support their agendas. When the swirl of division and disinformation begins to feel disorienting, I find solace and centering turning to the stories nature is telling. In my home state of Oregon lives a little butterfly called the Fender's Blue. It was once nearly extinct. But grassland restoration in the Willamette Valley, the only place this species exists, revived the population. At full growth, the butterfly has a wingspan of about an inch, and in its caterpillar stage, it is very small and fragile. Over millennia, these beings formed a remarkable relationship with several ant species. When the tiny worms are attacked by larger insects like beetles, they jerk their bodies in a hard tweak that creates a high-pitched sound. Ants rush to their defense. In exchange, the caterpillar emits a small drop of sweet nectar for the ants to feast on. Western worldview espouses competition, dog-eat-dog, and survival of the fittest, but nature shows life is actually about collaboration and cooperation. Earlier this year, I had the amazing blessing of spending several days on a glamping adventure at Borealis Base Camp in central Alaska. For those unfamiliar, glamping is basically camping in luxury. This was my first experience of the Northern Lights, and nature provided a great show. Green and purple swirls and spikes arched and danced across the sky, accompanied by bright, shimmering stars. The aurora borealis is a result of plasma flung off the sun that then travels 93 million miles in 24 to 48 hours to Earth, where it gets drawn into the Earth's magnetic field and pulled to the poles by magnetic force. Each morning upon waking at base camp, we would find that the snow on and around our cozy igloo-shaped cabin was dented with tracks from various creatures, snowshoe rabbits, foxes, pine squirrels, and who knows what else. The Northern Lights are visible to the naked eye, but the images are much more dramatic in photos because camera lenses capture more light than the human eyes can. While we sleep, myriad creatures go about their lives doing amazing things, completely unbeknownst to us. Nature is always showing us that there is more going on, more glory, more possibility, more to the story than our human senses reveal. We are in a time of trouble in this world, a heavy time, and there is grief in the bones of humanity. Ancestors and prophecies predicted such and noted that these are times to listen. The earth is always speaking. As we navigate the wild ride of this human part of our journey, it's useful to remember that in the field of possibility, there is far, far more potential than what's obvious to human senses. Cultural historian Thomas Berry wrote, "It's all a question of story. We are in trouble just now because we do not have a good story. We are in between stories. The old story, the account of how we fit into it, is no longer effective. Yet we have not learned the new story." We have the power to weave a new story about ourselves, our way of being, and our world. Nature is our best writing coach. Now is our time. Sylvia Hayes, and that's C-Y-L-V-I-A, is a speaker, author, and unity minister. Her Substack, Transcend, is about raised consciousness, economic system change, and a world that works better for all. She's also the former First Lady of Oregon. Visit Sylvia Hayes. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications, and you are currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader Candy Lewis. You can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. We return now to Channeled Messages from Deep Space, Wisdom for a Changing World, by Mike Dooley with Tracy Farquhar, who channels a group called Frank, and they are from another planet, another solar system. They've learned how to travel without traveling with their bodies or a spaceship, and they like to help other planets who are going through things similar to what they've gone through. Part one was about life on their planet, Rahashka, and we started part two last week, Life on Earth. Mike says, my questions in this section are to probe what Frank knows about who we are and where we've been, as well as to learn from them as much as possible about our history and place in creation that we've not yet learned from our own discoveries and self-reflection. So far, they've answered a few questions like, how many civilizations on Earth have you witnessed? What happened to Earth's earlier civilizations, of which we now see ancient and often mysterious ruins that litter the globe? But where did these advanced civilizations come from and where did they go? Did they evolve upon the ruins of the one before it? Did all the earlier ones collapse? How many might we be talking? 4, 40, 400? And what can you share with us about who created the famous pyramids on the Giza Plateau in today's Egypt? Why they were built, how they were built, and what we may still learn from them? And if you would, was the Great Sphinx of Giza part of the pyramid complex or entirely different? If different, why was it built and by whom? I will share their answer again. This is quite a complicated issue that would require many pages of explanation. Suffice to say that many seemingly miraculous things are accomplished through sheer will and ingenuity. You are witnessing this every day, so do not discount the power of the human mind by assuming some supernatural intervention. The human mind has its own type of supernatural abilities when properly motivated. The next question was, what do you know of our Bigfoot, fairies, leprechauns, Loch Ness Monster, chupacabras, and so on? And we pick up today with, are we more or less primitive than other worlds? We do not view your world as primitive. In fact, we are immensely impressed with the progress your people continue to make in such a limited amount of universal time. We understand the struggle of what appears to be the minority to create change when it is met with the social brainwashing of those who hold power and have become corrupted by it. However, we want to assure you that it is this desire for change that will triumph over the misguided paths and limited vision of those who appear to be the gatekeepers. Their power is ephemeral. It is as mythical as some of those creatures mentioned above, and it will not prevail over the determination of those whose motivation is clear and pure. We are quite touched and moved by the emotional intensity of those of you who strive to create change, not only in your own lives, but in the energetic field of your planet. This is not the work of a primitive people. In fact, the imbalance that exists is solely due to the vast acceleration of consciousness being met with a somewhat primitive social structure that rewards greed and the misuse of power. We have witnessed the swift destruction of other forms of civilization in the universe, but know that no form of life is ever completely annihilated, as it continues to evolve in a non-material way to assist in the evolution of the universal energy back to source. Mike, can you specifically speak to the origins and demise of Atlantis? Was it the greatest, largest, longest, running, most advanced of all earlier civilizations? We find no benefit in comparing the worth of the many civilizations that have inhabited your planet, as each has contributed greatly to the overall evolution and progress of it. Atlantis is merely one that has received a lot of attention among those who investigate these things in your world, and as such, its importance is inflated. In the grand scheme of the universe, its longevity was relatively short, its impact relatively powerful, and its life expression equal to your own. Mike, it is said that the Atlanteans knew how to harness power from crystals. Is this true? Are the crystals we find here on Earth like the ones that emanate power on your planet? How can we harness crystal power? Is it through thought? And or is merely holding or wearing the crystals useful? It is true that those from the continent of Atlantis were able to harness energy from crystals and other methods that were more focused on the natural energetic fields available to all. The energetic forces of crystals are understood by some of your scientists, but these findings are disclosed in only a limited way. There's a combination of factors here that is preventing the disclosure of crystal-based energy. Suffice it to say that there is much to be learned about the power of substances produced by your Earth that are renewable and less destructive to the environment than fossil fuels. The crystals found within your Earth are similar in structure and composition to those found on our planet. And in fact, there are many similarities in the energetic structure of planetary materials among all the planets in the universe. Just as no individual entity is exactly like another, crystals will have many qualities that are unique and many that are the same, depending on the environmental factors that created them. But all wield different types of energetic power that can be harnessed in various ways. Using crystals to produce enough energy to power the vast number of devices used in your world is possible. But the combination of factors needed for this to occur has not yet been mass-produced. This is not due to a lack of knowledge. Rather, it is through a suppression of information and the power of corporate entities that monopolize the research in this field. Crystal energy can be harnessed with a combination of solar energy and the geometric structure of the crystalline molecules that magnify the power of that light energy. There are certain types of crystals that are most suited for this, and some can be used in combination with others for a more powerful result. While those we have available on our planet vary from the crystals you have discovered on yours, it is our contention that the same results could be obtained with those you have available at this time, and that certain physicists and scientists have already produced great results through experimentation in this field. We believe that you will find this information will eventually be disclosed as part of the conscious shift your planet is now experiencing as more and more people demand it. Working with crystals is a good way to enhance and clear your own energetic field, and so we encourage you to explore this field if it resonates with you. The power of crystals has long been known in your culture, but not always believed. If you are drawn to acquire and work with them, you will find that they can produce results that are quite remarkable simply by carrying them or placing them in your environment. Mike, can you give us tips on how to harness other universal energies, particularly those that are easiest to access? The most accessible universal energies are those that are already present within you. And yet these energies are often the ones that are least utilized due to cultural conditioning that encourages doubt in them. The energies of your thoughts are an excellent example of this. And this is something that is widely examined and stressed in the teachings of your own work, Mike. We would like you to apply these same principles to understanding and seeking all other types of energy that may be available, but not widely utilized due to a structure of belief prevalent on Earth that is contrary to them. As with all change, first work on the self, and in harnessing your own miraculous energy, you will then find the ways to access that which is outside of yourself. And so, as an energetic being with unlimited powers of creation, one must go within, examine one's belief system about one's own power, and find evidential proof of it. What have you manifested through the power of your thoughts already? There is much evidence of this available to you. How can you take this further? How can you utilize the power of your emotions, your words, and your actions in order to create an energetic flow that is in harmony with all you desire? All of these things are covered in the works of our dear questioner here, and so we will not reiterate them. Instead, we will encourage all who read these words to put them into practice on a regular basis. This is how you will begin to harness the most miraculous energy available to you. From there, it is a matter of applying the same principles to other forms of energy. The energy of the sun is already widely used, and the use of this type of renewable energy is increasing as the population sees the benefits of it. The power of the wind is much the same, and experimentation is being done with expanding the use of the power of water. Some other types of energy that have not yet been examined in your culture include the energy of heat and cold, the energy of concentrated thought, and the energy of growing things, such as plant life. Magnetic energy has had some attention, but its full potential is not yet realized on your planet, nor has the energy of gravity and the orbits of the planets in your solar system. While we will not begin to explain these in scientific terms, we can assure you that there is much more to be discovered, expanded upon, and learned in the field of energetic study, but only when the threshold of belief is crossed and the limitations of the vested interests of corporate funding are overcome. You have only just begun to scratch the surface of what is possible with what is already available to you. Mike, might you explain your reference to the energy of concentrated thought? What do you mean by that? How is it created, and how can we harness it? This power has been demonstrated numerous times by various yogis and others who have perfected the art of meditation and deliberate conscious manipulation of the body's energy. It is the same technique that is used for energetic healing, focused energetic connection with others, and other phenomena such as psychokinesis and thought transference. It is achieved through practiced focus and relaxation. And it is what allows many to experience a heightened connection with themselves as higher beings and with other forms of existence, both in the physical and in pure energy. Your science has only begun to comprehend what can be accomplished through the power of the energetic mind, and there is much to be learned from the spiritual masters who already practice these things. Mike, how much more can we aspire to in terms of spiritual evolution? Spiritual evolution, as an expression of source, is unlimited. The experience of a material life, wherever and however this is achieved, is merely a small and sacred part of your spiritual existence. You are a multidimensional being, simultaneously expressing itself through multiple forms of existence, each one affording vast opportunity for knowledge and understanding. Even those who do not appear to evolve within this lifetime experience a huge shift through the experience of material life once they return to their spiritual source. No life is without that opportunity, and no spirit experiences a material lifetime in vain. The infinite nature of the energetic universe is a difficult concept for those experiencing a physical life to grasp, and in fact, we ourselves do not fully comprehend it, although we have felt it, and it is an immensely satisfying experience. Mike, are you aware of any impending contact with aliens and earthlings physically? This contact has occurred and continues with regular frequency. However, there is such a social stigma surrounding the perception of these experiences that those who report them are often labeled as mentally unstable or liars. Still others have their perception altered and are left with only a vague notion of an unusual experience. There is an understanding among the visitors to your planet that their discovery would not bode well for them, and so they employ any means available to avoid detection. At the same time, they continue to gain knowledge of the universe through the study of your rich and varied landscapes. Open contact with other worlds will not be achieved until the systems in place are changed to ones that are open to that connection and will not perceive it as a threat. Clearly, your civilization as a whole is not quite ready yet. Those who have experienced contact are often quite disturbed by it. Tracy has been associated with one who has had this type of experience. Until the concepts of universal energy are understood and other life forms are seen to be just as sacred as your own, these experiences will be interpreted in a negative way and will not be generally supported and accepted. Mike, when we've done what we chose this lifetime to do, is it possible to raise our vibration and disappear rather than physically die? That concept is not far from the truth of death in the material sense. It is simply a separation of the spiritual essence from the physical body, which will, in a sense, disappear. The spiritual essence does not alter, fade, or die, but all material things eventually do. And this is one of the great opportunities for spiritual advancement while still in the physical, the acceptance of the death experience as a sacred part of life, rather than as a tragic ending, is one of the most transformative steps towards spiritual evolution in any civilization. And so even those who achieve the highest elevation of vibrational frequency while still in the physical will have to experience death in the conventional sense, since it is part of the universal evolutionary process. Mike, what is your best advice for humans to live healthier lives? Balance is the key to a physically healthy existence. Returning to a more earth-based existence is beneficial, but that does not mean that all scientific advances made in the field of nutrition need to be negated. Awareness of the body's cycles and rhythms is extremely beneficial, but this needs to be done on an individual path, as the individual frequency of each being must be taken into account. The fields of nutrition and medicine often overlook the vibrational frequency of each being and instead group issues of health and wellness in categories that dictate the modes of treatment based on the disease rather than the individual. It is vastly important for each individual to gauge their own sense of wellness and to become acutely involved in their own well-being and the rhythms and cycles of their own bodies. While it is true that great strides have been made within your fields of medicine and wellness, there have also been huge shifts into modes of disease that perpetuate themselves through fear and reliance on the medical community. The diagnosis often creates the disease, and the fear of death often blocks healing and recovery. All forms of energetic wellness can be successfully integrated into conventional forms of medicine to create a holistic practice that supports healing rather than promoting disease. You are your own best physician. Become aware of your own power to energetically heal and support your own physical system. Mike, in an earlier exchange, you shared that there now exists on Earth the beginnings of a cure for cystic fibrosis that's been covered up or stalled by corporate profit-seeking. Can you please expound? Within the fields of medicine and science, there are an equal number of answers and questions. Just as one question is answered, another question emerges. And this is part of the evolution of understanding that is in a constant state of flux. Just as your desires spur action and purpose, the challenges facing the physical experience lead to the action of purpose of finding the answers and cures. This is the natural flow of existence, and it is what creates the energetic flow of being that engages your energy with one another and the community you belong to. There are, however, aspects of physical existence that resist finding answers, as the unanswered questions create need, and that need fulfills greed. And so within a needy society, there are pockets to be filled. This is not to say that the majority of medical and scientific researchers are motivated by this greed, but it is true that they are financed by it. And this creates an atmosphere of holding individuals in the energy of sickness so that they can be dependent upon the products that are created as a measure of relief for them, but not necessarily a cure. The genetic disposition of the disease of cystic fibrosis is already understood. There have been very successful experiments with human subjects using mutated genes that form a sort of chain reaction within the organism to relieve the overproduction of diseased cells and create a new generation of healthy ones. But as there is a business built around the treatment and systematic support of the disease, and not necessarily support of the patient, there's little funding available for what are being touted as experimental or not scientifically proven methods. You can be sure, though, that with the persistent will of those who are determined to advance these cures, the treatments will not be cloaked for long, and the methods will soon become more public. This will lead to more public demand and a greater outcry against the greed that keeps them hidden. It is the same for other high-risk diseases that have generated a huge range of manufactured pharmaceuticals and treatments that serve only to relieve symptoms, but not necessarily effect a cure. Those who choose to bring these diseases into the world through their physical incarnations have done so with the full knowledge of the challenges they will incur, and they are here to bring knowledge and awareness of the nature of compassion, health, and greed to the forefront so that these systems can be healed. Author's note: this is not meant to be an indictment on any organization or field, nor have we asked Frank for any follow-up information, as we know too well that they're not the sort to divulge more than is necessary to inspire our own inner and outer searching. Mike, speak to intelligence, emotional and intellectual. It seems so lacking in many people. Are we just lazy in thought? We would suggest that you broaden your definition of intelligence, as we have found that the limitations placed on this concept often negate intrinsic forms of knowledge that are just as vital to your life experience as others. The traditional ideas around intelligence are quite narrow. They consist of conventional learning and education, rule following, and constrained ideas about the nature of your world and the universe. Those who do not value this type of knowledge are not necessarily lacking in intelligence. In fact, their purpose may be to broaden your view of the world to include a more visceral sense of knowledge, such as forms of social communication and a deeper sense of connection without the constraints of conventional knowledge. Those who appear to be of a lower state of consciousness are experiencing the world in a very deliberate way. It is their divine path, and it is vital to their own experience and that of the world in general. One cannot dictate the value of experience by confining it to the narrow space of conventional education and knowledge. There are many layers of conscious expression, and they're all quite valuable, whether they are expressions of conventional intelligence, emotional expression, communication of the heart, or simply a sense of being present in the world without the higher brain functions that are valued and emphasized in your culture. Universal intelligence is far greater than any form of brain function, and it is where we return when we are released from the physical constraints of that brain. The concept of laziness is one that is more closely linked with a disconnection from the higher forms of consciousness that urge us on toward a higher expression of ourselves. It is through the social conditioning of the masses that this type of apathy becomes laziness, and it is through the realization and exploration of ourselves as higher beings that we are propelled out of that sense of complacency and not necessarily toward an emphasis on brain-centered intelligence. Mike, I've noticed in a very few people the seemingly unique ability to enhance their own intelligence to levels well beyond that which they were born, adding greatly to their quality of life. For most people, though, this ability seems completely absent, for which they're comparatively handicapped. What is this ability? Is it wisdom or street smarts? Is it earned? Is it a psychic phenomenon? Is it a chosen dispensation? The intelligence that you speak of is not what we would consider intelligence at all. It is an awareness of one's own power of discernment, one's own connection with divine intelligence, and one's inner wisdom, which all have unlimited potential to answer, assist, and guide. It is true that this type of awareness is rare, although we find that it is a growing phenomenon on your planet that is connected to the shift of consciousness occurring in the present time. This type of awareness is strongest in those who have done the inner exploration that has led them to a greater understanding of themselves as an extension of divine energy, not a separate entity from it. This is not an easy concept for many to grasp, and even among those who believe they have grasped it is the stubborn will that holds on to aspects of the old belief systems that can help the individual feel safe, less responsible for their own lives, and comfortably ignorant. There is a sense that this behavior is often rewarded in your culture. Intelligence of this nature is not often seen as a benefit except among those who possess it and practice it. To those who avoid the desire to cultivate it, it seems like a waste of time, as the ability to coast through life appears to be much less work. Again, this can stem from the sense of laziness that we discussed earlier, but it more likely comes from a long-standing belief system that dictates that humans are victims of a life they didn't ask for, in a world that is flawed, among people who are constant challenges, and with insurmountable difficulties such as health issues, relationship issues, and work issues. Although it does not create much happiness in the individual, this type of unconscious coasting through life helps people feel that they're off the hook, that they no longer have to take on any more responsibilities to themselves, and that they can continue to rely on others to either solve their problems or support them with sympathy. All beings are born with the spark of the divine within them, however. Not all beings choose an incarnation in which they're conscious of this spark and can delve more deeply into it. This is by design. These beings who appear to be sleepwalking are vital to the balance of the social structure on your planet. There cannot be divine intelligence without ignorance, just as there cannot be enlightenment without unconsciousness. Those who choose the less conscious state are not choosing badly. They are providing valuable insights to those around them who contemplate questions such as the one you've asked here. They represent a different perspective on the world, which may seem childish or ridiculous to those who are more grounded in the truth and more connected to the inner spirit. However, their very ignorance may motivate others to explore their own awareness and intelligence and ask the deeper questions of themselves and those around them. In other words, when we are presented with that which reflects poorly on us, we have the option to delve more deeply within rather than concern ourselves too much with dwelling on the problems and issues of others. While these people will challenge you and perhaps even hinder some of your growth through their excessive time-wasting tactics, please know that your work has a deep and profound effect on all beings, even those who are having a difficult time assimilating it. There is an energy to the word written with a deep sense of truth and love that will resonate even among those who have never opened one of your books, Mike, or have never delved more deeply into the mysteries of the universe than their own front yard. These beings provide lightworkers such as yourself with a mission. They are the ones who have not yet been reached with the truth. In fact, they may never be reached in this lifetime, but that just means their life path is designed for some other purpose that is just as grand. It is also important to note that in the work that you are so graciously doing in the world, you are attracting scores of people who are looking outside of themselves for truth because they're blind to the truths that lie within. This means that your daily experience is filled with evidence of this lack of awareness or intelligence, and so your perception is that the world is hopelessly filled with these types of people. In truth, there are many present in your world who are moving beyond ignorance every day and who are exploring more deeply and more universally the idea of truth and the meaning of all that they experience. Do not despair in your perspective, as it is limited at this time. Instead, focus your attention on those who are seeking to spread the sense of enlightenment to everyone, even to those who have created a bit of a mess. These others serve to highlight areas where this work is still needed. Mike, are there other species on Earth that are philosophical? Other species that wonder about how they came to be? If so, which types of animals, species, have you had a two-way communication with any of them? There are many different levels of intelligence among the sentient beings in your world, and this intelligence does not always correspond with the ideas you may already have in your belief system about the nature of intelligence. All beings, from the simplest and smallest to the most complex, have a level of conscious intelligence and awareness of their own existence that goes beyond the programming of the brain. They're born with an innate knowledge of the nature of being, and for some, this knowledge is not questioned or pondered, but simply accepted as a reality of existence. While there is knowledge of past experiences and anticipation of future events, most of these creatures live very much in the present moment, adjusting their actions to their needs in that moment and holding their energetic field in whatever that experience is offering them. And this is our stopping point for this week. As always, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and peaceful new week, and I look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher Program.